Hello, everyone, and welcome back, and welcome to Minute 132 of The Great Escape Minute, the daily podcast where we dig into The Great Escape 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today is Jeanette Ward of The Mundane Adventures of a Fangirl. Welcome back, Jeanette.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Yeah, well, we had a lot of fun yesterday, so I figured I'd give you another shot.
You know. Oh, good. Thank you. You'll keep me around as long as I continue to perform admirably.
Exactly. As long as you add to the discussion and the conversation and the dialogue, then that's fine. You know, once you're not, you know, you're out of here.
All right. Fair enough.
Wasn't that our deal?
Yes, absolutely. It is a fair deal.
I don't want to welch on the deal, you know. All right, Minute 132 begins with Hilt continuing to hide in the bushes and goes all the way till we see Danny and Willie shove off. So, as we were discussing yesterday, in the middle of Hilt's scheme of taking a wire, whether it's a piano wire or whether it's a wire from a fence holding in quadrupeds, we're not sure, we'll never know, he pulls that across the road and is waiting for something. So, I mean, one of the things that I found very interesting when I was looking at the original script, okay, they actually have... this scene take place right after a scene that happens later in this minute with Willie and Danny. They basically show that Willie and Danny are walking under a bridge, and a whole bunch of there's a motorcade of military vehicles that go over them, and including a few motorcycles.
Oh, and then, establishing shot of motorcycles on a road.
Exactly. Now, they don't do this here. I mean, we left everyone in the lurch yesterday when we mentioned the fact that we're wondering what Hiltz knows that we don't know.
What is Hiltz's plan?
Exactly.
His plan that we see enacted is, I'm going to undo this fence and take the wire and go across the street with it in the hopes of snaring something. And snaring, I have to assume he's thinking vehicle because he goes across the road with it. Ideally, it feels like motorcycle is what he's looking for, but what if he hits car first?
Exactly.
Would a car just go through that wire, I feel like?
I would think it would.
And also... let's talk about his plan a little bit deeper here, because he puts the wire across the road at a certain height. If he had put it higher, as we all know, listen, anyone who lives here in Wisconsin knows, people in northern Wisconsin, I feel like inevitably every year you get somebody who is riding a snowmobile in the winter and gets decapitated by a wire that's across the field they didn't see. So thank goodness Hiltz puts this low enough where it stops the motorcycle and doesn't decapitate the rider. Although... both would accomplish what I assume is his goal of getting him a motorcycle.
Exactly. Now, I'll once again ask you what movie has something similar happen where someone puts a wire across a road and they actually do decapitate someone. That was their goal.
So many wire-based vehicle decapitations in movies.
Okay, so I only can think of one that reminds me specifically of this one.
Which one are you thinking of?
It's a World War II movie with Harrison Ford.
it's the Indiana Jones 3, right?
No.
No. Doesn't he pull a same, like, across the road? No, you know what? He steals that motorcycle out of a barn. All right.
Yeah. No, it's Force 10 from Navarone.
You know I wasn't going to get that.
Well, you never know. Maybe you would have. It's possible. You know, it's the sequel to The Guns of Navarone, so maybe. You never know.
Okay.
Well, which one were you thinking? What movie were you thinking of? Because that's the only one that popped into my mind.
I keep thinking of terrible horror movies. I remember it happening in an episode of CSI Miami as well. terrible sci-fi afternoon movies.
And anything that happens in Upper Wisconsin in the winter.
Well, listen, it's sometimes people mix drinking and then snowmobile riding, and you know, at that point, you can't see wires even if they are across your path.
Right.
So, yes, let me sum this up. What I'm saying is I'm grateful that he strings this wire low across the road, but then I'm back to the, was that his plan all along? Of I'm just going to string this low across the road and catch a motorcycle because I know there's a motorcycle coming. And perhaps you can answer this. Are motorcycles so highly used at this time in this specific area that he feels his chances are very, very high of the first thing coming by being a motorcycle?
I have no idea if he feels that. I mean, we know that he wants a motorcycle. There's no question about that. There's a scene that was cut out of the movie that's in the original script where he's chatting up a German motorcycle rider across the fence when he's in the camp. Like, he's in the camp and there's a motorcycle rider standing outside, and they have this long conversation about a motorcycle, similar to the conversation that Henley has with Werner, where he's trying to one-up him the whole time. My motorcycle is better than yours, even though I don't have one. You know, that type of thing.
So they continue to establish that he is a skilled motorcyclist.
Yes. So I wanted to just read a little portion out of the original script that discusses this whole scene. You know, as I mentioned before, that one of the things that they establish in the script that they don't do in the movie is show the close proximity of all of these prisoners with everything they're doing. So they have an established the highway and railroad bridge. Okay, you see the train go by where the prisoners, you know, the POWs that we discussed last week are on the train. Okay, it says the train passes by, rattles across the bridge that passes over a small river. On the road paralleling the tracks, Danny and Willie trudge along. The sound of approaching motors emerges from the diminishing sound of the train. Danny and Willie run off the road. So here we get a point where, you know, Danny and Willie, you see the connection from them to the train, and then they start hearing cars coming. So they go under the bridge. Danny and Willie come down the embankment, hide under the arch of the bridge as a dozen military motorcycles zoom by overhead. The last of these have sidecars carrying armed men. Danny glances off, reacts, runs off. Willie follows. And then we get the next shot where we see the road is narrow and winds through a thick forest. Hiltz comes up out of the deep ravine. Standing at the edge of the road, he studies its relation to the ravine, makes some mental calculations, then takes the piano wire from his pocket, now tied in one long single length, and crosses the road, ties one end of it to a tree. He lays the wire slack across the road on a bias to the edge of the ravine. Picking up a heavy branch, he ties the end of the wire to the top end of the branch. The sound of approaching motors. Hiltz grabs the branch, runs back to the cover of the trees behind the ravine, places the branch as a lever, and braces himself. Okay. And then they say the convoy of motorcycles that passed Danny and Willie comes roaring around the corner in a single file, stretching out now by the winding road. One by one, the motorcycles zoom across the slack wire on the road. Between the last and the next to last, Hiltz hauls the wire taut. The motorcycle with sidecar careens along the slanting wire and is deflected into the ravine. It disappears from sight. A thump is heard, then silence, except for the sound of the departing motorcycles. So, in the original script,
in that script, he is then actively
waiting,
fishing for a motorcycle and selects it and raises the wire to specifically catch that particular vehicle. In this movie, he just puts the wire across and hopes that the first thing that comes across is a solitary motorcycle rider.
Exactly. Which it is.
Yeah. Luckily.
Which, you know, just have one motorcycle coming by.
Fascinating. Because it would, honestly, he gets very lucky in the situation we watch. In the script that you just read, that's far more like he takes advantage of the situation that is at hand.
Which makes more sense.
Than what they do here. Speaking, absolutely.
You know, this obviously, you know, cuts down on a little bit of time, which I'm assuming is one of the things that they're trying to do here also.
Yeah. I also do like the idea of it. What's interesting is that nowadays, if you were shooting it, you could use a drone and use a single shot, establishing shot of like train down, Willie and Danny swoop around, see the motorcycles, and then take that drone and then roll it around. You could see Hiltz in that. You could do that all in a single thing and establish how close together all of these characters are location wise.
Yes.
That would be fascinating.
In 1962, they couldn't.
Couldn't do that. No.
No.
They did the best they could.
Yes. No, they did a great job of it. I don't think anyone could do it better now.
Yeah, you're right.
There's no question about that. Now, also, one of the things, I'm not going to continue reading the script at this point, but in the script, it's a motorcycle with a sidecar that
Then he's got two guys to deal with.
That's right. He has two guys to deal with. So here we have the motorcyclist come down the road. Again, completely deserted road. No one else is driving on the road except for this lone German soldier who is in for a very big surprise. And he basically, as his motorcycle is going along, we don't see him hit the wire. We just see that the motorcycle
we don't see
just
a wire.
Go out of control.
He skids out. Exactly. Almost as if he tried to turn too suddenly, which that's probably what the stunt guy did. Like, oh, turn, slide, crash. Here's what I love. The cut to him rolling down into the ravine and the stunt guy selling the crash, like, ah, jumping and, like, flailing into the underbrush.
Yes.
Love it. Fantastic.
Completely.
Sells it hard.
Yes. They do that really well. And, you know, and you seem like his body, like, jerks and flails at the end, which is great.
All the way down into the ditch and then just this, at the end.
Exactly. Now, when the biker loses control, if you look at Hiltz's face, he has, like, a very strange look on his face. Like you're not sure if he's trying to say, I meant to do that. You know, like, wait, where's that from? There's a famous character that would always say, I meant to do that, when everything would not go his way. Like, he expected to do something. was that Get Smart?
Oh, probably. That seems very...
I think it is Get Smart. You say, I meant to do that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure. I think it
might
be...
Yeah, it's also kind of interesting because we see him... the end of him flailing into the underbrush from where the bike skids out, like, he must have tumbled and rolled all the way down that ditch.
Yeah, completely. Yeah, so I it's just very strange the way that you know, this whole scene works out. It just doesn't look as realistic as you would expect it to be. But you know, Hiltz ducks down and, you know, looks either embarrassed or whatever when it actually happens. They're like, he doesn't want to be seen. You notice that he ducks down?
Yes, he kind of hides him. I love it. It's also kind of the... I would love for him to be like, oh, well, this isn't what I intended at all. I didn't want a motorcycle. But no, that's exactly what he's planning on. And luckily, we can talk about that tomorrow, but my goodness, it's a good thing that guy's his size.
Well, we'll discuss that also, because the script is a little different, because there's two soldiers that are there in the original script. But yeah. No, so... You know, you'd think that possibly he would, you know, ruin the motorcycle by doing something like this. Isn't that also a possibility?
Absolutely, it would seem to me. But no, because the guy kind of gently skids out and then flips himself into the ditch, the motorcycle's fine.
Yeah.
The wire didn't damage it. It's not caught in the spokes or wrapped up in the wheels or anything.
And I love the little splash of water as he hits the, you know, as he goes into the ravine. You know, the motorcycle hits the edge of the grassy area there, grassy knoll, I guess you can call it. Mm-hmm. And then she, like, this slight little splash of water.
Where did that water come from? Doesn't matter. We're not supposed to think about it. It's there was a little puddle there that he ends up in, which
a
is
a little
fine.
Stream. You know.
Yes.
Islands of the stream, right?
That is what we are.
Exactly. And then we get to see Danny and Lily, who in the script we've already seen, but in the...
Yep.
You know, this is the first time we actually see the two of them, and they're just leisurely walking through the
strolling through the forest,
countryside.
And again, as per their score is very like pleasant hike.
Yeah.
And again, the shot of the river is gorgeous. The bridge, it's such a gorgeous little European village.
They're in such a pastoral area.
Yes, and the river is lovely and still, perfect reflection of the town in the distance, perfectly reflected in the water below, and then with the bridge. And they happen across a boat, and they're like, hey, a boat! And without saying anything, they look at each other, and they're like, yeah, yeah.
They nod to one another and say, yeah, let's take the boat.
Let's get in the boat.
Never thought of doing something else. Let's go with the boat.
Go with the boat. Here it's appeared for us. Clearly we're meant to get in the boat.
Yeah.
The score is certainly telling us what to do.
The score is great because it gives you, it's like, it felt to me like a fantasy type of sounding music.
It almost does, yes.
You know, like something you'd hear in Lord of the Rings or something like that, you know. Mm-hmm. Here you got Frodo and Sam walking and they find a boat. There you go.
They find a boat. They look at each other. They nod. They move to get in the boat.
Exactly. And then we get a nice establishing shot of this whole little area. Now, it makes you wonder if they, you know, how much do they really know about where they are? You know, are they actually getting into a body of water that's going to get them somewhere? Or is it just, you know...
listen,
is it going the right direction, the wrong direction?
That if you follow a river long enough, it's going to get you someplace. To some sort of city somewhere.
Yeah, but, you know, you want to make sure that it's something that you want to get to.
They don't seem to. I have to imagine. I don't remember a scene in the movie where someone pulls out a map and says, okay, here's where you could end up. Here's what you need to know about this area. But with all the research they were doing, I have to feel like someone had a map in there and they were like, okay, well, we can estimate that we're in this general area and this river is this location.
Right.
So now, I have to assume they have some idea.
They do. They do. They, first of all, they all have compasses. In real life, they also had real maps. In the movie, they never discuss it.
No one in the crew is called, referred to as the cartographer. Everybody else has a nickname. No one's the cartographer.
Right.
Which seems to be like, in an escape, that should be the first guy you have.
Correct. I mean, one of the things that we discussed a few weeks ago, the fact that the OSS would send maps via the Red Cross with games of Monopoly.
Oh, wow.
Monopoly games had hidden maps inside of them. You know, they'd have the, you know, free parking was marked with like a little red dot. You knew that you had a map of a particular area. You know, things like that. It's really fascinating.
Amazing. Amazing.
The way that this whole thing, you know, it's just unbelievable what they had. What can I tell you? In the movie, they decided not to show us these things.
Yeah, that's fine. We will assume that. They exactly. were familiar with the area.
Correct. And then, you know.
Honestly, the lack of surprise they show at seeing the boat, I almost felt like, for a minute, I was like, oh, perhaps they knew that boat was there, and they're like, yes, here's the boat that we planned on getting into.
They ordered
it. Because it has that kind of vibe of like, oh yes, here's the boat, as expected. Let us now get into it.
We ordered a boat, you know.
Pre-ordered.
That's right.
We Uber. It's our boat Uber. It's here. Now we are. And honestly, it's more of a boat rental, like Enterprise rent a boat, because it's there for them to pick up.
that is an interesting point. All right, so we continue a little long, and we get to see a truck driving down a road where we get to see more of your quadrupeds that we don't know what they
unidentified
are.
Quadrupeds. Unidentified quadrupeds. So far quadrupeds. In the distance, you can't tell.
In the background, trying to give us something. You know, a truck comes by, and then we get to see Cavendish standing on the side of the road.
Yeah, just, you know, standing on the side of the road with a parcel, no big deal. I just escaped from prison. It's cool. I'm hitchhiking.
Basically, yeah. And he also has this very strange, he's like carrying a parcel with him.
Yeah. What's in that? No idea. Do we know what the side of the truck says?
Yes, we do.
Okay.
Meaning, do we know the German or do we know the translation?
Have you translated the German on the side of the truck? What
yes,
does that
I have.
Truck say?
Okay. Well, what's written there is Maskriden Friedrichen, something
Fabricant?
Like that. Nuremberg HOF. Checked to see what that is, and basically the answer that I got was is it's a machine works yard located in Nuremberg. Now,
okay.
I don't know
so
where.
So this is a business truck.
It's a business. It's a delivery truck delivering parts.
Parts and supplies.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
And the driver has no problem, you know, being like, yeah, of course I'm going to stop and pick up this guy. I know I'm in an area where there's a massive war prison, but that's cool. I'm just going to stop and pick up the guy.
No, but they are going through their daily routines. They're not not everyone is alerted to the fact that we now know that there's been a prison escape nearby.
Well, also, and wasn't the prison fairly recently built? Is it possible that the locals in the area did not yet know there was a new prison in that location?
It's possible. I mean, again, we're talking 3-4 months, so you know they might know, they might not know. I mean, the garbage men look like locals. You know, weeks back we discussed, you know, that there were these two guys standing around collecting the garbage. So they must have been locals.
Yeah.
But I would assume that you know it'd be good for the local economy. Someone's got to be making food for them.
So yes. Here in near prisons, you always see signs that do not pick up hitchhikers.
Yes.
there are signs near prisons that say that.
Yes.
So I feel like the prison is so new, a sign like that has not yet been posted. Or perhaps it has, and this truck driver's like, yeah, that's all right. I'm going to pick him up anyway.
Yeah. Now, in the original script, there's a character who I haven't been able to identify who he's supposed to be because he's an extraneous character who has a lot to do. His name is Merivale. He's actually the character in the original script. Who hitches the ride, like Cavendish? I mean, he's also they gave him some really fun stuff. He at one point he's you know hiding on top of a train, you know, speeding train. He has to duck down because it goes into a tunnel.
Oh, wow. You know,
they had some nice action shots with this Maryvale.
Few more action sequences.
Yeah.
Huh.
We don't really know who Maryvale is because there's nobody who he fits into. So basically what we have here is a supply truck that from a machine works yard in Nornberg. And, you know, then we get to see Cavendish walk over to him and asks for a ride.
Mm-hmm.
And the response of the driver is actually, again, this is all in German, translated from German, says, but of course, get in. Which, there's nothing
friendly
to be afraid of around here. There's, as you said, I didn't see any signs saying beware of...
Nope, please don't pick up hitchhikers.
Exactly.
Nope, it's fine.
He thanks him and gets in to the truck. The guy
opens
the door for him.
He's wearing a, and an overcoat, carrying this parcel. He looks very businessy.
Yeah, but why is he walking around? That would be the big question that I would ask. It's like, what are you doing here?
Rule number one, do not pick up hitchhikers.
Exactly.
Well.
Yeah. And then, you know, he starts talking to him. I love how he, like, tips his hat as he gets in. You know, Kevin just, like, tips the brim of his cap. Exactly. No one can see that you did that, but I could.
Oh, thank you. Did some great cap tipping miming there.
Exactly. She did a very nice job of that.
Thank you.
You know, he's very happy with himself. He's very pleased with himself that he was able to get this ride.
Yep. Like, well, I got a truck. I'm home free.
Yeah, I don't need to walk anymore.
I'm sure the rest of my escape will be great.
Exactly. And then, you know, I'm home free at this point. I'm going to Nornberg, wherever that is. Then we the last few seconds of the minute, we get another shot of Danny and Willie as they're, you know, Willie's sitting in the boat already, and Danny gets into the boat and pushes him off. I like the way that he kicks off. You know, it's done in a very efficient way.
Danny sits down to row and Willie sits down to steer. And again, we hear no talking between them. So as they walk out of the woods and nod to each other, like, there's our boat, get into the boat. There's no discussion of, well, you paddle. No, I don't want to paddle. You paddle.
We
no,
did
it's
miss
just
that,
inevitable.
Few seconds. They didn't show us, you know.
You figure they had a whole rock, paper, scissors to find out who was paddling and who was steering?
Maybe. It's very possible.
Because it is just a rowboat. It's not like a canoe where each of them gets one paddle.
Right.
This is a rowboat where one person is rowing and the other person is handling the rudder. So.
Yes. But tomorrow we'll discuss that because
we
just see them get into the boat at the end of this minute.
Oh, so we don't know yet who's rowing.
We don't know what they're going to be. No, we know where they're. We know based on where they're sitting.
Spoiler alert.
Danny's rowing. We can notice because of where they sit. And come on, if you have a choice between John Layton and Charles Bronson, who are you going to have roll? Who's gonna get you there faster?
All right. You are right. You're right. There I can't argue with that.
All right.
Bronson every time.
Exactly. So you have anything else you want to say about this minute, Jeanette?
No, I feel like we covered it.
All right. Excellent. So why don't you once again tell people how they can get in touch with you?
You can check out my movie reviews over at my blog, which is jwardadventures.com. blogspot.com. Check them out over there, and you can check out my belly dance troupe at tamarindtribalbellydance.com.
All right, excellent. You can go visit our website, thegreatescapeminute.com. Our Twitter account is greatescapemxm. Our Facebook group is The Cooler, and our email address is thegreatminute@gmail.com. So, Jeanette, do you feel you did well enough today? You can come back again tomorrow?
I hope so. I have a lot to say about who's rowing and who isn't.
Okay, great. So everyone tune in tomorrow to hear Jeanette's thoughts on who is rowing. So until then, tally-ho!
Tally-ho!